You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Of course, we'll be following the school shooting in Connecticut that has left dozens of people dead, including the gunman and children. And there'll be details later on All Things Considered, a complete wrap-up. Right now, we're going to talk about the invention that changed how we picture the world. Do the elements of this story sound familiar? Listen, it's a startup company that's created in a garage. A genius inventor, of course, is in charge of this thing. The latest technology combined with great design into a device that everyone had to have it. Sounds like Apple, doesn't it? Actually, it's a true story of one of Steve Jobs' heroes, Edwin Land, the man behind Polaroid cameras. You know those cameras that you just point, you shoot, spits out that photo? People used to wave it around a little bit. They didn't have to. It turns out in the 60s and 70s, everybody had to have one. Hard to believe they're such a rarity now, but they are. Here to tell us more is Christopher Bonanos. He is author of Instant, The Story of Polaroid. He's also an editor at New York Magazine. Thank you for coming in today to talk about this.
Great to be here.
Wait, tell us about Edwin Land first. He really was the creative genius behind Polaroid, right?
He was, and he really built a company on the spot where art and science meet. And, you know, he conforms to that Silicon Valley mold. He was a college dropout who saw something to do with an invention he had and then ran with it for the rest of his life.
And he had some history. He effectively created the U-2 spy plane. He advised presidents.
That's right.
He was made goggles, the special Polaroid goggles for the military, right?
That's right. He was a really public figure in his time in the way that Jobs was in ours.
Mm-hmm. Did he run Polaroid like Jobs ran Apple?
Well, somebody who knew both once said to me that Land was the kinder genius. You know, he wasn't a ranting screamer in that way that Jobs could be, as we all know from the biography of him that's out now. But he certainly exerted pressure in the same way. You know, all his employees have stories of calls from Land at 3:30 in the morning where he'd say something like, I was thinking about an idea. Could you come in and talk it through with me over breakfast at 5? And they would go.
Wow. And there's also very famous pictures about, you know, the iconic Steve Jobs presentation where he's sitting at a desk in a big auditorium. Land did that first. Like a black and white copy of what he was doing.
It's uncanny. Yeah, he figured out that the shareholders meeting of Polaroid starting in the mid-60s did not have to be just some financial officer getting up with a spreadsheet and sort of reeling off some numbers about the previous year and doing a little speech. Instead, Land, you know, he'd have stages built and there would be music and there would be fresh flowers and things and, you know, it would be a show. And he would eventually take the stage after some warm-up and he would have the camera or whatever product was being introduced in his hand and he would sort of talk about it philosophically and explain more than sell. And by the time he was done, if there was a new product coming out that year, you were brought into his world and you had to have this thing that you had never heard of until that moment.
Our phone number is 1-800-989-8255, talking with Christopher Bonanos, author of Instant, The Story of Polaroid. The pictures in this book are just worth the price of the book itself. They're just gorgeous pictures. And one thing you note from reading the book is in its heyday, all these famous artists had to have a Polaroid to use. What was special about the Polaroid camera?
Well, it was a number of things. Some of it was the instant feedback aspect. You know, mm-hmm. if you were taking pictures, and you've got to remember that especially in the early days, you know, you were sending them out to a lab often in another city. You got them back by mail. It took you a week. And if you were photographing something in the moment, an event or a shoot or whatever, it was gone. You couldn't get it back and do it again. So to have your picture suddenly in 15 seconds, which some of the black and white film did develop in, was a miracle, you know. Mm-hmm. So some artists just used it for that immediacy. Others just were besotted with the color palette. You know, the dyes in Polaroid film don't look like the dyes in other color films. They're more saturated and it's hard to describe the difference, but they are unique and they look like something all their own. And, you know, a lot of people really liked Polaroid color and went with it.
And there were also some artists like Mapplethorpe who, if he took a picture of a nude body, it wasn't coming back from the lab.
That's really true. And right. the cops might have shown up if they'd seen those, you know. Especially in the early days, he was doing that very strongly homoerotic stuff. And, you know, the privacy and intimacy that Polaroid photography provided was useful to him as he developed as an artist.
Now, you have a couple of Polaroid cameras with you.
I do.
How did they evolve? Show us what you have. Let's do a radio demonstration.
I was just going to say, pictures on the radio, right? You know? Uh-huh. The earliest ones are of a form that looks very old-fashioned now because it's a big camera with a bellows that unfolds and you focus it by shifting the bellows forward and back.
Oh, that's right.
It has a rangefinder on top.
Right.
And they are the earlier form of the film where you pull a paper tab out the side of the camera after it's fired.
And people would wave it around thinking they had to dry it off.
That's right. Well, in the early days, it was wet. You had to coat the black and white film with this sort of little swab of
an
plastic
applicator.
Goo.
I
that's
remember
right.
That, yeah.
And it smelled awful and it got on your fingers. It was a pain. And even after that went away, people kept shaking. And they do to this day. They get a picture out of an old camera or something that's bone dry, and they wave it in the air with this idea that it makes it develop faster or something. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the thing about a Polaroid picture is that it shouldn't work. It's way too complicated to put into a little packet and develop by itself. It shouldn't work. And people feel the need to help it somehow. You know, they let the magic out.
Yeah, they have to do something with it because it just can't be magical on its own.
That's right. You got to help it. The other camera I have is from the later series that began with SX-70 in 1972. And it folds down and up with a little strut on the side to prop it up. And this is one of the later models that focuses, if you can believe it, with sonar. It has a little panel above the lens that sends out a ping like a bat, an ultrasonic ping, and it bounces it off the subject, and the lens spins to focus. I think it was the first commercially available camera that focused automatically.
And then they wanted to make a really hot consumer model, didn't they? The Swinger.
Well, that was a little earlier. That's right. In 1965, there was a big push. So color film had just been introduced a couple of years earlier. And they wanted to start selling more black and white again because the color was so popular that nobody was buying the black and white. So they made a very inexpensive camera that shot only black and white pictures. They got the price of the camera down to $19.95, and they marketed it to teenagers. And it worked. They sold, you know, I think it was 7 million of those cameras.
And so what was the draw of that camera?
Well, it was very cheap. It made okay pictures. They were very small, but they it was fun. Mm-hmm. And it looked groovy. It was white plastic. It looked like a big sort of bubble. It was, you know, kind of mod looking. And they had one of the great jingles of all time in the TV ads. The ad was called Meet the Swinger. And the tagline was, it's more than a camera. It's almost alive. It's only $19.95.
And Allie McGraw was the model.
That's right. There was a model in the ad who nobody knew. She was just some photographer's assistant who was doing a little modeling in New York. And 5 years later, she was the biggest movie star in the world.
You just gave yourself away with the word groovy. So.
Yeah, well. I spent a lot of time in 1965 while working on this book.
I lived through it, and I remember watching all these cameras. Remember, there was one you had to really rip the back out really hard to get, because you were squashing the chemicals together, right? It was developing right there in a little pouch. That was part of it.
When you pull the tab out of the side of the camera in the older forms, you're putting a positive and a negative together, and there's a little sac called the pod of developer. It's about, a tenth of an ounce or something. It's a very small amount of gooey stuff. And as you yank it out of the camera, you're breaking that pod open, and you're pulling it between a pair of rollers that smears the fluid between the positive and the negative, and then the dyes start moving in the color film across from one to the other. So you actually had to give it a tug with a certain amount of vigor.
Yeah, the smear is the technical word.
That is. Well, you know, inside Polaroid, the technical word for the stuff was the goo. You'd actually see it on the technical documents. There'd be a column marked goo.
Let me see if I get a call in here from Christian in Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Christian.
Hello.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
Hi there. Go ahead.
I just had a interesting personal story about it because my father told me about my grandmother used to be a secretary for him, Mr. Land, back in Boston.
No kidding.
The 40s. And he had offered to give her, stock in his invention just before he was coming out with it. And I thought it was a nice touch because he's obviously a very kind person. I heard you mention that earlier in the show.
So she must have been a gazillionaire after that, right?
Unfortunately, no. She had to turn it down because She was starting a family, and she didn't. I guess she didn't have enough faith in it or whatever. She just needed to have money right then and there. So, yeah, we missed out on the...
What was her name?
Her name was Bernice.
Last name? Or you don't want to do that? You don't have to give it out.
No, no. I was just curious because I've run across a lot of old employees' names in the research. No, there are many stories of land being a sort of generous soul. You know, Polaroid had the best benefits available to everyone. He really believed in creating a work environment that was, you know, a lot of profit sharing and sort of open. Right. You know, he got rid of the factory time clocks at one point because he thought it was a good thing to do.
How did he come up with the idea?
Well... the company was built on another product entirely, the polarizing filter. And that product was tremendously useful and applicable during the war in all sorts of military stuff. And as the war started to wind down in 1944 and 45, he needed something new. And on a vacation at the end of 43, he and his daughter were in Santa Fe. She was three. And they were taking pictures all day. And she looked up at him and said, "Daddy, why can't I see the picture now?" And he said, "Well, and the story goes that he sent her off to be with her mother for a few hours, and he walked around the resort they were staying in, working it out in his head. He once said he worked out the whole thing in 3 hours, except for the details that took from 1943 to 1972 to solve.
Minor detail.
Right.
The devil is in the details and in solving the Polaroid problem. Yep. So. Was it a secret? Was it that no one else could do? Why was just one Polaroid? Why were there not competitors?
There were. He was a master patenter. And in fact, the amazing coincidence is that on that day in 1943 when he was on vacation, his patent lawyer also happened to be in Santa Fe on vacation. Mm-hmm. And that night he went over to the guy's hotel room and started dictating. Even after that, though, they were very careful about secrecy and they locked everything up with patents. And it meant that they had, you know, 100% market share for instant photography, and the profit margins for many years were fantastic.
Fantastic is the book Instant, the Story of Polaroid with Christopher Bonanos. We're going to also bring in now Flora Lichtman is here with our video pick, which involves working with
none other than Christopher. We did our video pick this week about a Polaroid camera.
Not just any Polaroid camera.
No, that would...
Too tame for us.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is almost one of a kind. It's five of a kind, and it's the biggest Polaroid, biggest living Polaroid camera.
This is Science Friday from NPR. And where is it? Where did you find this camera?
It's in New York at the 20 by 24 studio, and that's a hint, actually, about the camera itself. So the camera is called the 20 by 24. It was built in the late 70s. Christopher has more details on that for sure. And it now lives at the studio in New York, and it's called that because that is the dimensions of the snapshot. It's a 2 foot tall
snapshot.
And the camera itself.
Instantly.
The camera itself. Okay, so you're imagining a Polaroid camera, or I am in my head. Now imagine that it's 235 pounds. And when it spits out its instant photograph, which is, it works in a similar way to how Christopher just described, where it goes through rollers, but it's like the scale of everything is almost hard to imagine.
And you don't have to imagine it, luckily, in this case, because we have up as our video pick of the week. It's up there on our website, and you can download it also on iTunes. We'll be ready when we get it up there on YouTube. It's up there. You can see the camera. You can see Flora having her picture taken, that giant photo.
The star is really the camera, folks. Believe me.
And this is something that photographers use, and a lot of artists.
Many photographers. Andy Warhol, Chuck Close uses it, Annie Leibovitz, William Wegman has used it. And the thing about these pictures that, you know, it sounds amazing. You have a headshot of yourself that's 20 inches by 24 inches, but the reality of that is that you see things on your face that you never wanted to see. I mean, every pore in your skin is like a cavernous pit that you... I'm just speaking for myself. Lady Gaga, I noticed, who also has been photographed by this camera, she opted for something less close. That's true. She's a smart lady.
Let me ask both of you. What is the state of the film? I mean, how much film? They don't make the film anymore, right, Christopher?
Polaroid has got out of the film business. They dropped out in 2008. But there are a few options left to people who shoot Polaroid pictures. The older peel-apart stuff, one format, is still made by Fujifilm in black and white and color, and I shoot a lot of that. And then the more familiar one with the white border that spits out the front, SX70 and the ones mm-hmm. that came after it, are the factory was bought by two enthusiasts in Holland. This was the European factory. And they reincorporated as something called the Impossible Project. And they've spent the last almost 3 years trying to reformulate this film with no access to Polaroid's ingredient supply chains. They had to come up with chemical workarounds for everything. And their first batches of film were sort of beta tests or maybe alpha tests. They weren't all that great. The new stuff is shockingly similar looking to Polaroid film. They've really, really sort of brought it around. The new color film looks like it's supposed to
look. Is that because Polaroid had it locked up in patents?
Well, the patents mattered less as the years went by. But what they did was they would buy, you know, 100 truckloads of some chemical that goes into the film. Right. And nobody else made it because nobody else wanted it. And these guys, it's a dozen people in a factory in Holland. They can't order any volume.
They used a limited amount of film on you, Laura.
Yeah, we were very lucky to have it used. I think they have 1,000 black and whites left, so they're much more careful about those. We had color taken, and there's 15,000 pictures left for that. And anyone can book time with them. If you're interested in a supersized holiday card, maybe you just I don't know if you could mail that, but
should bring it into the studio and take a group photo here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's our video pick of the week up there on our website at sciencefriday.com. If you want to see this camera, you want to see a giant 1.5 by 2 foot picture, just unbelievable. And thank you very much, Christopher, for coming in. Christopher Bonanos is author of Instant: The Story of Polaroid. At those of us who lived those years are very happy that you wrote that book.
Thanks so much.
Flora Lichtman is our multimedia editor at Science Friday, and we had help today from Greg Smith, who composed our theme music, and from NPR librarian Kim Molesky. If you missed any part of the program, you'd like to hear it again, subscribe to our podcast, audio and video. Maybe troubled people hearing the show today, they're very welcome to go to our website at sciencefriday.com. And also, it's our book club. What do we have for our book club coming up? We have
The Planets.
The Planets. Oh, yeah. Coming up.
Next week.
Next week, read The Planets, and we'll be discussing that at our book club. If you missed any part of our program, you can download it on our website. Also, iTunes and Android apps. Have a merry, merry Christmas, and we'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.